welcome once again to Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science community here on WCOM LPFM, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. This is Ernie Hood. I am a freelance science writer. And each week here on the program, we bring you cutting-edge information about what's going on in science here in the Triangle, one of the world's leading hubs of scientific research and development. You can email us at radioinvivo@earthlink.net, and you can access a full archive of all of our past programs at radioinvivo.net. Radio In Vivo is underwritten by the Hamner Centers for Health Sciences in Research Triangle Park. The Hamner is a renowned leader in environmental health sciences research and education. For more than 25 years, the Hamner has contributed science that guides sound regulatory decisions and protects the health of the public. WCOM and Radio In Vivo thank the Hamner for its support. Radio In Vivo is also underwritten by the National Evolutionary Synthesis Center in Durham. NESENT is a collaborative effort of Duke University, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and North Carolina State University, and is sponsored by the National Science Foundation. NESENT's mission is to facilitate broadly synthetic research to address fundamental questions in evolutionary biology by providing an environment for fertile interactions among scientists. Radio In Vivo and WCOM thank NESENT for its support. And Radio In Vivo is also underwritten by the North Carolina Association for Biomedical Research. Since it was founded in 1989, the NCABR has been fulfilling its mission to promote public understanding and support for bioscience research and careers. To learn more about the benefits of bioscience for the future of North Carolina, visit NCABR's homepage, www.ncabr.org, and its clearinghouse of bioscience resources, which is www.aboutbioscience.org. WCOM and Radio In Vivo thank the North Carolina Association for Biomedical Research for its support. And last but not least, Radio In Vivo is now also underwritten by the Moorhead Planetarium and Science Center at UNC Chapel Hill. Moorhead's monthly Current Science Forums series presents expert speakers and lively discussions of today's science headlines. Moorhead Planetarium and Science Center is online at moorheadplanetarium.org. WCOM and Radio In Vivo thank the Moorhead Planetarium and Science Center for its support. And, of course, the Moorhead Planetarium and Science Center, as our newest supporter here at Radio In Vivo, very welcome. And this week, I am thrilled to welcome two of the Moorhead staff people to the microphones. And it has been a real education for me to find out about the many exciting things that have been going on at the planetarium. And today, we are going to spend the hour sharing that excitement with you. Suffice to say, it ain't your father's planetarium, and it ain't just about astronomy anymore. So joining me today on Radio In Vivo are Jeff Hill, the Director of Marketing and Business Ventures at the Moorhead, and Denise Young, who has been Executive Director since 2004. Jeff leads Moorhead's marketing and business efforts and manages Moorhead's administrative aspects. He was hired in 2002 as the first marketing director in Moorhead's history. He also served as interim director of the facility from February 2005 to July 2006. Jeff holds an MBA from Kenan Flagler Business School at UNC, as well as bachelor's degrees in journalism and political science from Carolina. Prior to business school, Jeff was an Emmy Award-winning television producer and has worked in marketing for Bristol-Myers Squibb. And Denise came to the Moorhead in 2002 as its first ever outreach director, and as I mentioned, she has been education director since 2004. She has a master's degree in school administration and a bachelor's degree in elementary education and American studies, both from Carolina also. So with my Carolina degree, you've got three people in the studio with six UNC degrees. Go Heels.
That's right.
Denise is a North Carolina Teaching Fellow and was also awarded the prestigious North Carolina Principal Fellowship. She's been a classroom teacher, a gifted education specialist, and a school-based curriculum facilitator. In 1998, she was awarded the National Board Certification for Demonstrated Excellence in Teaching. Well, Jeff and Denise, now that we have your qualifications all established, welcome to Radio En Vivo, and thanks so much for your support of the show.
Great. Thank you for having us.
Good to be here.
I think most people in the area are really familiar with the Moorhead. It's certainly one of the landmarks of Chapel Hill and the Triangle. So instead of starting out with the basics, I'd kind of like to start our discussion today with the headline, the fact that in recent years the Moorhead has grown and evolved substantially, becoming a full-blown science center with programs addressing all areas of science, not just astronomy and physics. Can you tell us about that process and how the Moorhead's mission has expanded, and whoever wants to address that first, go ahead.
It has been a long process, actually, at this point now, Ernie. It started really back in 1999 and 2000 with the 50th anniversary of Moorhead Planetarium. Mm-hmm. The university appointed a task force to look at where the organization had been, where it was going. And one of the primary recommendations that came out of the task force report that year was that Moorhead needed to focus once again on cutting-edge science, that whenever Moorhead opened in 1949, space exploration was still something out there in the future, mm-hmm. and astronomy was still something very much cutting-edge. And there are still aspects of space exploration and astronomy that are cutting-edge, but you look at how our region has developed during the last 50 years with Research Triangle and all of the influx of scientific-based companies.
Sure.
It makes sense for Moorhead to really focus on more than just astronomy, to be a place where the Triangle and the state can come to learn about cutting-edge science, and especially science with a UNC flavor a lot of times.
Sure. Because there are other very good science centers across the state, so having that kind of UNC connection for this one, I'm sure, makes it unique.
It does, and we have the advantage of being on the university campus, and it's one thing that we hear in professional conferences all the time, is how do you get current science out of the lab and onto the museum or science center floor? Mm-hmm. And, well, we have a campus full of scientists and researchers who are trying to find some way to deliver public programming and educational programming. So we have an advantage over most every other science center and museum in that aspect, not only really in the state, but we're finding nationally as well.
I see. So it was really in 2002 that this all really came about, that the facility was rechristened, as it was put, Moorhead Planetarium and Science Center.
Right. Holden Thorpe, who is now the Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, was brought in as director to implement a lot of the recommendations of that task force report. And one of the decisions that was made was, if we're going to do more than astronomy, we need to have a name that reflects that. And a lot of different ideas were tossed around for names. And the one thing that came back was, people know this as Moorhead Planetarium. It has a great tradition, a great history. Mm-hmm. Don't get rid of that. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Right.
And they add onto it and Science Center to reflect the expanded mission.
I see. Well, I understand that the really first concrete manifestation of that expanded mission was the debut in 2003 of the film called DNA, The Secret of Life, which is still running today. Denise, tell us about how that project came about.
Well, we were looking for a way to kind of make our mark on the AND Science Center portion of our name, mm-hmm. and had an incredible opportunity through our affiliation with the university and with cutting-edge scientific research and connections to key scientists in the world. And we're able to institute a partnership with Dr. James Watson, and others, to create a program that was a to become a PBS series. What we wanted to do, though, was take portions of that PBS series that we think would be most applicable, most interesting, most relevant for the general public, particularly for school children who are learning about genetics and genomics in middle school and high school, mm-hmm. and create programming in the form of a movie that we could share with the students and teachers. We then knew we were onto something great because other museums and science centers around the country started calling us and asking us about it. Mm-hmm. We were able mm-hmm. to...
I wanted to ask you, have you licensed it out to
other
facilities?
We were fortunate to get some support to be able to provide it to every middle school and high school in North and community college in North Carolina.
Great.
And then we have been able to share that film with other museums and science centers around the country.
I see.
It has been shown at the American Museum of Natural History in New York, where I believe it's still showing, mm-hmm. the Tech Museum of Science and Innovation in San Jose. It's also been shown at the Calgary Science Center, the Museum of Science and Industry mm-hmm. in Chicago, and several other facilities. And we're still getting a lot of positive feedback. Just the other day, I had an email from a lady in New Orleans who wanted to buy a copy of it because her son had seen it while they were on a trip in New York and had just fallen in love with it. And I guess she wanted it for a Christmas present for
mm-hmm.
him.
Mm-hmm. And is it available for purchase like that?
It is available for purchase. We have a connection with Carolina Biological Supply out of Burlington, mm-hmm. and they are our distributor for that. You can go onto their website, carolina.com, and search for DNA Secret of Life and order it up.
Great. And, of course, Dr. James Watson that you mentioned, being of Watson and Crick fame, the mm-hmm. co-discoverers of DNA.
Exactly.
I almost said co-inventors. Wouldn't that have been awful? Well, looking at your website, it is just amazing how many different programs you are offering right now at the Morehead. To give our listeners a sense of the breadth of the lineup of shows and exhibits, I'd kind of like to go over everything that's on the menu, at least briefly. Jeff, why don't you start us out by filling us in on the planetarium show itself, which, you know, I'm sure is still considered the core capability. I understand there are actually 11 different programs on offer in the Star Theater, but the one currently running is actually the world's longest-running planetarium show, and now in its, if I count correctly, in its 58th year.
58th year, yes. Star of Bethlehem is currently running. A lot of those shows stay in rotation, so things like Solar System Adventure and Magic Treehouse, Space Mission, you can still see. But Star of Bethlehem is the big draw during the holiday season. Mm-hmm. It was revamped in 2002. Charlie Gaddy of WRAL fame, the former anchor there, is the narrator for it. It uses the Star of Bethlehem story to address a lot of different astronomical phenomena. And so we really like the way it brings together a story in that's, you know, has a lot of relevance in our culture and tie it into a lot of science as well. And so a lot of people enjoy it for the cultural story, and a lot of people appreciate it for the science.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's running through January 1st.
I see. And it runs every year at this time, right?
Runs every year at this time, mm-hmm. and is our biggest draw on the public side of the equation, as opposed to school groups.
I see. Well, tell us about some of the other planetarium shows. For example, I'd really like to hear all about the newest show, which is called Destination Space, and premiered in late 2006.
That one is really taking us back to the Morehead's history, mm-hmm. that Morehead was the home of celestial navigation training for the NASA astronauts in the 1960s. And a lot of people, especially of a certain age, shall we say, still remember that as being the calling card for Morehead. So when we started looking at developing a new planetarium show back in 2005, we sat around in my office and we threw out a lot of different ideas, and we kept coming back to that idea, Denise,
sure,
that space exploration was a topic that our guests, our visitors, and North Carolina really expected to get from us. And there was nothing in the planetarium. There was very little on the floor about that, other than a plaque here or there referencing that. Sure. And we started looking around at other planetaria across the country, and really no one else. I had, you know, one of my students do a little research. 41 metropolitan markets, planetariums in virtually every one of those markets. Nobody was doing anything on space exploration. And so we started bringing together Destination Space. Do you want?
Sure. And even more important than no one had been doing it, and it was part of our history, I'd just like to say that nothing captures our imaginations, and particularly imaginations of young people, than the idea of going into space, going to the moon, going to Mars. There's a lot of talk in the news at the time we were doing the show about NASA's new vision for space exploration. We just could not pass up the opportunity to produce a show that was going to capture the imaginations of students and their parents, the way that, that space exploration does. It's either something you remember from when you were growing up, if you're a parent or a grandparent.
Absolutely.
Or a teacher, and or something that you think everyone, when they're a child, thinks they want to go to the moon, go to Mars and beyond. So we just couldn't pass up that opportunity.
Well, what a great idea, especially if no one else had been doing it.
That's right.
And, you know, reading over the bit of history about the astronauts' training at Morehead, which was, I guess, mostly before my time in the area. I moved here in the mid-70s, so I wasn't really aware of that. It was just amazing to read that and see the names like Neil Armstrong and John Glenn and Alan Shepard, you know, these icons that were hanging out at the Morehead a while ago.
We're getting ready to put a couple new artifacts from that time period on the floor in early January. We'll have some new information, and actually, the Gemini chair that the astronauts trained in on the floor, and people will actually be able to go sit in that chair and experience for themselves how difficult it would be to learn to find your way by just looking at the stars. So we hope people would come and experience that for themselves.
Right. Which actually worked out, if I read the history correctly, that some of these astronauts that received this celestial navigation training right there at the planetarium had to use it.
They did. There were several occasions, I believe it was Gemini 6, I believe, that required them to reorient the spacecraft to make sure they got the right entry. Also, Apollo 12, and to some degree Apollo 13 needed it as well to make sure that they were able to line up the spacecraft. The one thing that a lot of people don't necessarily appreciate, and which I don't think I truly appreciate until I started working at Morehead and saw the Gemini chair, which is one of the things Denise was referencing there, is how low tech by today's standards it really was, the space exploration efforts of the 1960s. Today's cars have a lot more computing power than the rockets that went to the moon.
I think our wristwatches have more.
I think they may actually. I think they do. Definitely yours.
Yeah.
So that was one thing that we looked at as something that was really interesting, to show the ingenuity and the creativity of these people in the 1960s to get them back into, to get them to the moon.
And that's really kind of what made them the heroes they were at the time, that they were taking these enormous risks that maybe, you know, it's not quite that dangerous today.
It was enormous risk, and I mean, it was just really sort of crazy to some degree that Charlie Duke, who is who was born in North Carolina, is one of the 12 men who actually walked on the moon, appears in the show, and he came and did interviews at the planetarium as we were producing the show, and he was saying, you know, he was in the Air Force, I believe, in the early 1960s when President Kennedy, you know, set his sights on the moon, and he said, you know, we were all sitting around going, yeah, right, that's never going to happen. And within a decade, he was basically on his way to the moon. Mm-hmm. So amazing what did come together in such a short amount of time in D.C. and with NASA.
Sure. Well, that sounds like just a great show. I'd love to come see it at some point. When is that running again?
Oh, you would put me on the spot on that one.
We'll check the website.
www.moorheadplanetarium.org. I think Destination Space will be returning actually after Star Bethlehem goes off the schedule in January. I don't think it's running right now.
Okay. Well, you know, the Moorhead, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, is one of the few planetaria in the world that actually produces its own original programming. How does that work? How long does it take to get one of these new shows designed and implemented, and what's the process like?
It's an immense amount of work, and I just have so much respect for the people who create our programming. It starts, as most great things do, with a great idea. Mm-hmm. We do have people on our staff, really talented producers, writers, multimedia developers, who work with ideas, create scripts. We work with experts to fact check and make sure we're telling the story in the right way. And then it's a process of putting together media, special effects, music, lighting, integrating all of that into a one-of-a-kind planetarium system. Each planetarium has its own way of getting programs up on the dome.
Sure.
So there's a lot of technical work that goes into that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, within 9 to 12 months, typically, we can have a new program ready.
I see.
It's an exciting, creative, exhausting, exhilarating process.
I can imagine. So what is the current technology that's used in the planetarium show? I know you go in and you see this.
Current might be
an
exaggeration, actually.
Okay.
And there's actually an interesting story there, is that we're looking at replacing the technology. The planetarium field is moving towards digital technology, mm-hmm. which actually would allow for a lot more sharing and programming in the future, and also bring the planetarium world into the digital age. That with the advent of, you know, really high-end video games, IMAX movies, you know, a lot more digital graphics, the bar has been raised a lot in recent years.
I can imagine. Mm-hmm.
The technology that Moorhead operates with right now dates back to the 1960s. There was a new Zeiss Model 6 star projector installed in 1969 with a useful life of 25 years. It's still running right now, and thanks to the dedicated efforts of our technician, Steve Nichols, to keep that running. Plus, there's an array of slide projectors, which Kodak incidentally stopped making in 2004, and Denise's favorite part, all the homemade special effects.
We have baby food jars that get flashlights spun into them. We've got disco balls, all these things behind the scenes, mm-hmm. colanders with special lights. There are lots of low-tech ways that we create big impact on that dome, and it is so much fun. It's like going into the garage, seeing what you can find, what it'll look like, and just experimenting to create incredible special effects. We have that. We also have some video projectors. Those were newly added around 2002 or
right.
so. So we started kind of inching our way towards more modern technology. But the Zeiss is certainly the star of the show.
And it's all woven together with the early 1980s era computer system.
That's true. That is true.
So when will the big upgrade step happen? Is there a projection on that?
We work for the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, which means that all timelines are moving.
Right.
We're hoping that within the next year, we'll be able to start making that transition.
Have other planetariums become more digital, as you say?
They have a lot of the major planetariums in major cities, but there is not a digital planetarium of the size and scope that we would be installing between here and, or between D.C. and Georgia. There's mm-hmm. actually one in Columbus, Georgia, and the Smithsonian Planetarium at Air and Space in D.C. Mm-hmm. have gone digital. And there are a couple of smaller digital planetariums around the state. Rocky Mount has one. But the smaller planetariums can't seat that many people. They can only handle certain types of programs. And the resolution of the programming isn't all that great, whereas the resolution that you would see in the system that we will be installing is dramatic along high-definition lines.
I see. Well, boy, that gives us something to look forward to. Absolutely.
We are excited about it. And also at the same time, a little bit terrified getting away from what we know with the star projector as it has been there for 37, 38 years now.
Yeah. Well, don't throw it away.
Absolutely not.
Put it out of the lobby.
Denise is planning on putting it in her living room, I think.
So. No, it'll have a place of prominence in our building for a long time to come.
I'm sure. Will that allow, I think you started to allude to it, a standardization of the programming that you can share, you know, not only what you produce with others, but bring in programs produced elsewhere?
That's true. One of the things that that little system I described to you about how we're set up right now, no one else in the world has that system.
Right.
We're going to buy something that other planetaria already have in operation with basically, you know, it's similar, we've described it to, you know, buying a CD player. Any CD you can put into it and you can play.
Mm-hmm.
Or buying an MP3 player, perhaps, is the more modern, and any MP3 will play on it.
Sure.
And we've had a lot of places that have had interest in our program. We've had, you know, calls from Italy and Germany about showing Magic Treehouse Space Mission. But right now, it's so difficult to convert a show. You're basically starting over from scratch. That's cost prohibitive to share a show in that format.
Mm-hmm.
However, when we move to a full dome video projection system, which is what this would be called, it's much easier to share and it's much easier to bring in. It's not completely the easiest thing in the world, as easy as perhaps putting a CD in, but it's a lot more doable than it has been.
I see. Well, that'll be good. That'll certainly allow you even more diversity.
I think so.
Programming.
The one thing that we've noticed, I think that we actually do well, is we focus on educational programming, and there is still a big need in the full dome video arena for educational programming, such as Solar System Adventure, Earth, Moon, Sun, which really target 6th grade and 3rd grade curricula, respectively. Whereas a lot of the venues that have moved into full dome video, like Hain Planetarium in New York, have been producing really what I would say, you know, is basically IMAX for full dome. So much more of a spectacular, much more, you know, gorgeous visualizations, but not necessarily targeting some of the traditional audiences of planetaria worldwide.
I see. Well, you do at least have one digital facility called the NASA Digital Theater.
We certainly do.
There's a lot of programming going on in there, such as programs called Science 360 and Science Live. Denise, why don't you fill us in on some of that material?
Sure. Well, Science 360 was an idea to take the best of what we think we do and can offer at Moorhead and expand on that idea. As part of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, one of the greatest assets we have is the people, or the people who either work on the campus as researchers and staff, or the students. We employ a lot of students from the sciences, from education, from communication studies. And we certainly are grateful for the partnerships we have with the faculty and the different science departments. What we wanted to do with Science 360 is create a mechanism for training the students to become better communicators of science. So we created a program that we're grateful was funded from the National Science Foundation. And in this program, we train students to work to become better communicators, whether that's in script writing and research, background research for programming, whether it is in the media production aspect, when we use media to support programming, or whether it's in the presentation, so working directly with the visiting public. We created a structure that involves choosing a topic. We spend with the public 20 minutes on that topic. It's usually a topic of current interest in the mathematics, physical sciences, and go through with the students involved a complete process of producing a program that's appropriate for the needs and interests of the public. Some of the programs we have are the Pluto puzzle. What happened to Pluto? Pluto is still very much in the sky, but why is Pluto not classified as a planet anymore? That's something that we're able to explore with visitors through a 20-minute Science 360 program. Mm-hmm. It's facilitated, but it does have multimedia elements to it.
Okay.
We are working on a program right now about global climate change. Just this morning, before I was walking out the door, heard that the title of it is Heat Wave. It'll be out in March.
Students actually conduct these presentations.
That's right. They develop them, mm-hmm. And then they present them on the floor with the public.
And we've just introduced a new one on the floor about 2 weeks ago.
That's right. That program is a program about stem cells and stem cell research.
Mm-hmm. Well, I laud you folks that you do not shy away from the issues of controversy. That's a great thing.
Absolutely not. In the case of stem cells, we, in talking with the public, realized that a lot of people had lots of opinions about stem cell research but didn't necessarily know the science behind it. So we spend the time in our Science 360 program about stem cells really kind of helping people understand what stem cell research is. Mm-hmm. And then we do pretty head-on talk about controversy.
That's great.
Yeah.
One of the things we like to try to do is to really make sure we're focusing on the science so we're able to inform the public debate about the topic so that people actually understand it. Because when you look at a lot of the data and a lot of the research that's been done, people find science centers and museums to be very honest purveyors of science. And so we want to play that role with important topics provide the information and then let people really have a good, firm grounding in the science as they debate the public policy implications.
Absolutely. Well, that's terrific that you're doing all that. My guests on Radio In Vivo today are Jeff Hill and Denise Young from the Moorhead Planetarium and Science Center. Jeff and Denise, we have spent a good bit of our time so far talking about the planetarium itself, but as we've been kind of alluding to right along, there is just so much more going on at the Moorhead these days, with much of it addressing other areas of science, and this is fulfilling your mission to be a full-blown science center. And I'd like to go into that aspect in a little more detail. Denise, maybe you could start us out by telling us all about the Moorhead's first interactive exhibit, which is called Zoom In, Science at the Extreme.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. That was a labor of love for us. For many, many years, we were a planetarium. You came to the planetarium with your family or your school group, and you saw a planetarium show, and then you left. And we wanted to create a more attractive experience for our visitors. And we have so much to offer, again, because we're affiliated, located on the campus of UNC Chapel Hill. We just have science brimming all around us. And wanted to connect and saw ourselves as a way to connect and be a bridge between the scientists and the general public. We started brainstorming with staff some ways that we could improve the visitor experience. We started talking with faculty about how they might be willing to work with us towards that goal, and came up with the idea of an interactive exhibit that would highlight some of the recent research at the university. We've been known as a planetarium and as North Carolina's astronomy classroom for many, many years. We figured we had to start with astronomy or we would just freak people out. so we started the exhibit with an exploration in size and scale. and immediately went to Dan Reichardt's group at the UNC Physics and Astronomy Department to talk about a recent discovery, gamma ray burst discovery, and spent a lot of time figuring out how we could make that topic accessible to our visitors. Created that part of our story of size and scale. And then we were so moved by a story of a young woman who has cystic fibrosis, and the research efforts, kind of interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary research efforts happening on the campus through a project called the Virtual Lung Project, to really understand the physics of what's going on in our lungs, and how dedicated the scientists from the mathematics department, the physics department, from medicine, from a variety of different departments were towards finding a cure for cystic fibrosis through joint effort, that we couldn't imagine passing up the opportunity to integrate that story, which fit perfectly into size and scale, because there's a lot of micro and nano research that happens on that scale as they're studying cystic fibrosis and how the lung works. So we spent some time. This was a new skill set to be developed among our staff. We spent some time figuring out how do you make an exhibit, and then how do we add our own special flair to it. Morehead has always prided itself in being a place where you're going to connect with people when you come visit. All of our planetarium programs are facilitated. There's a knowledgeable person there you can ask questions to before and after the program. We wanted that same special Morehead experience in the new experience we created. And so together we came up with an idea of an exhibit that had interactive components to it, that would explore important science topics, but would also have that human interaction. It's facilitated. We've got UNC students who are helping the general public go through the exhibit, engage with the content, understand it more deeply.
That's great, because so often you go to museums and go to their interactive exhibits, and it's just you're on your own.
That's right.
I would think that would really enrich the experience.
It's, I think, one of the most unique aspects of Morehead Planetarium and Science Center, that we spend a lot of time thinking about how to engage the visitors while they're in the building, learning content, learning strategies to kind of draw people in, keep them excited, and be able to go into a topic more deeply than you could if you were just walking up to a standalone exhibit or kiosk. And that, you know, when we were trying to decide what we wanted to do, we visited lots of museums and science centers and other cultural institutions around the country. And the thing we kept coming back to was Morehead ought to be a place about human interaction and human-to-human learning about science.
That's great. And you mentioned it was a new skill set.
Absolutely. We're still recovering.
Yeah. I understand that this exhibit Zoom In was also produced and installed very quickly for an exhibit like this, 40 weeks.
Yeah, that's the other thing. When we're trying to figure out how do you be a science center that's really about current science, the traditional model of exhibit development just wouldn't work for us. Takes typically 3 to 5 years to develop an exhibit, and just an enormous budget, a huge staff, and we didn't have any of that. We really kind of had to turn exhibit development on its head, and we said, if we want to get a story, science story, out while it's current and fresh, we need to be able to produce it more quickly than that, which means we'll have to design, develop, build differently. And we'll also need to create it in such a way that we can continually update it. The other thing that was just incredibly frustrating to our staff as we were traveling to cultural institutions is you would walk into an exhibit and realize that the content was kind of old and tired. The exhibit looked worn out. And we understand on the back end, because we're Jeff and I are continually trying to fundraise and figure out how to sustain our efforts,
sure,
that want, if you put a lot of time and effort and money into an exhibit, it is hard to kind of take it off the floor and change it out and continually update. But we really wanted to create a structure to try to do that. And I think we came up with, for our first try, I think we came up with a pretty good model. We're able now, and in the process, that exhibit's been on the floor about 6 months. We're already getting ready to change out some content. There have been updates in the research that we want to share with the public. We've been able to integrate the scientists into programming in the exhibit. So I think we've come up with something that we're pretty happy with that serves our purposes.
That's part of the, you touched on something right there that we're getting ready to change out some aspects of that, that there are a lot of science centers and museums that if you said you're going to put something on the floor and in 6 months you're going to start tinkering with it and changing things out, I think their head would explode. And that one of the reasons why it takes 3 to 5 years in so many facilities to put an exhibit on the floor is because they're planning on that exhibit being on the floor for 15 to 30 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, literally, because right now the Air and Space Museum in D.C. is just beginning to start thinking about how they're going to update some of their exhibits there that have been on the floor literally 30 years.
Sure.
And if you are a museum that is a destination museum that you're going to go to when you're a child and when you take your children there, that's fine. But we want to be a facility that's about continuous engagement, where you're going to go back to Morehead every 3 months, every year at least, to see what's new, what's different, because there is going to be something new and different there. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we can't afford to put 3 to 5 years in exhibit development and leave something on the floor for 30 years.
Sure. Well, with that in mind, tell us about the next one coming in called The Ancient Carolinians.
Sure, and it just opened.
It has opened.
It
okay,
just
I
opened.
I couldn't tell
couple,
from the website.
Yep, couple
it's
weeks.
A soft opening.
Soft
okay,
opening.
Okay.
Opened on November 17th. That exhibit was a collaborative effort with the Research Laboratories of Archaeology. They are holding in trust a collection of artifacts that represent the oldest artifacts on record for this area of the country. They're somewhere between 10 and 12,000 years old. Stone tools found in basically the central part of the state near Morrow Mountain or the town of Baden. Mm-hmm. And the Research Laboratories for Archaeology, they've been doing research on this collection for many, many years, over 50 years. The donor, in this case the Alcoa Foundation, wanted not only to donate the artifacts to the university and to the people of North Carolina, but wanted to make sure that people understood how important it is to take care of our culture and to take care of our artifacts. So they engaged the Research Laboratories of Archaeology, and then we were engaged as a result of that effort in creating educational programming. One aspect of which is this exhibit, The Ancient Carolinians, that would really help people get to see the artifacts but understand that our culture is important, we need to protect it, and that we've got a long, long, long history in North Carolina.
Absolutely. Well, it's very exciting to be able to see some of these artifacts that have never been publicly
never been seen before.
Displayed.
That's right. That's right. And again, this is a facilitated experience, so we've got trained educators on the floor who can talk with people about the artifacts and all the other interactive experiences that are in the exhibit.
I see. And how has the reaction been? You say it was a soft opening. Is there going to be a big premiere at some point? Or
there'll be more of a celebration of it following the start of the year. That with Star of Bethlehem opening right now, we wanted to give the Ancient Carolinians, you know, it's day in the sun, and it's hard to do it when you have Star of Bethlehem open, so we're holding that until January.
But the reaction has been great. I was actually in the exhibit last week with, over the course of the day, 120 eighth graders. Eighth graders study North Carolina history as part of their social studies curriculum. Mm-hmm. And
you survived.
I lived to tell about it. They left the experience really excited. They left the experience with a lot of new information. A lot of North Carolina history doesn't extend that far back. You know, the Roanoke Colony seems to be where where North Carolina history begins, unfortunately. So they left with a lot of new information and a great deeper appreciation for our collective history.
Absolutely. That must be, the educators must really appreciate the experience of being able to bring their groups from, you know, as you say, I'm sure all over the state regularly, come in and not only see the planetarium show, but also have some other learning experiences.
And to find something that truly connects to your curriculum is increasingly difficult. And yes, they value it greatly. We spoke with those educators in particular that day, and they were thankful for the experience. And we did some special hands-on classroom type activities in conjunction with that visit to the exhibit about the process of archaeology, the science of archaeology. And they had kind of an aha moment, like, oh, I can do this in my classroom. And that's the true value, I think, of an experience for school groups at Morehead, is that you'll find topics that are connected directly to the curriculum and hopefully take away some new ways of thinking about teaching in the classroom as well.
Well, that's certainly very much needed. And, you know, I'm sure you guys are grown-ups. I'm a grown-up, and I remember as a child.
You don't know us that well, Ernie.
Well, you're at least...
You're the first person who's ever called me a grown-up.
You're at least adults.
Yes.
Grown-up may be questionable, yes. And I'll share that with you. But what I was going to try to say was, you know, I certainly vividly remember some of the field trips I took as a child. That must be a really vivid experience for these kids who were, again, coming in from all areas of the state, you know, small towns. And man, coming to Chapel Hill and going to the planetarium, that must be a very memorable experience
for
them.
We have people every week who come up to us, you know, they're 50, 60 and older, and say, I remember walking into that Star Theater. Mm-hmm. I remember coming there with my school group on a field trip. And they seek us out to make sure that we know that. I mean, Morehead Planetarium is a beloved place in this state. It is an institution. Mm-hmm. And people do vividly remember walking into that dome for the first time and that aha moment. And it's great when they can come back.
Well, you're doing a terrific job with this heritage.
The fascinating thing, we're doing a survey right now, a statewide survey, and we have found that about 31% of all North Carolinians have visited Morehead Planetarium and Science Center at some point during their life. And that aha moment is still there for kids today. One of my favorite stories working at Morehead is the story of the elementary school child from Lumberton who came and was just absolutely, you know, amazed by the planetarium. And the kicker was saying, and Chapel Hill is really great too. It's the biggest town I've ever been to. We're like, okay, wow, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. And but it does, you know, give you that perspective that there are a lot of places in North Carolina where they are not bombarded and inundated with all the resources and opportunities that we have in the Triangle on a daily basis.
Right, right. Well, I don't want to fill the hour. We've only got a few minutes left, and we haven't covered all the programs yet. So I'd like to share some information with the listeners about a really neat-looking multi-platform program that I assume is also still coming soon at the Morehead, all about biodiversity, involving a new film and new activities documenting the biodiversity right under our noses.
That's exactly right. We've got kind of a multi-pronged approach to biodiversity education through Morehead. Similar to the DNA movie in which we collaborated with Dr. James Watson, we were fortunate enough to enter into a partnership to produce a movie with Dr. Edward O. Wilson at Harvard.
Another highly
renowned,
very well-known name.
That's
science.
Right, kind of father of biodiversity. We've been working on a movie with him. We also gathered a group of biologists, ecologists from UNC Chapel Hill and the surrounding area, and developed a slate of programming with them for the general public. We recently held a BioBlitz, which was a 24-hour event where we counted the species in Mason Farm Park Biological Reserve with the partnership of the North Carolina Botanical Gardens. We had a couple hundred people out over a 24-hour period of time. We will just be posting that information about what we found on our website in the next few days. That's taken us a while to weed through. There was a lot of interesting discoveries that day. We have been integrating biodiversity in education into summer camps, programs for families. Over the summer, we had an ant farm. And actually, as we talk about morphing that Zoom in experience, the interactive facilitated exhibit about mm-hmm. size and scale, biodiversity is going to show up in there in the near future.
Okay, so, great.
So that'll be something for people to look forward to.
Oh, that's outstanding. Mm-hmm. Well, so much of this new and expanded activity that we've been talking about at Morehead seems to be really directed toward getting people involved, either in hands-on activities or interacting with scientists and students and things like that. And one of the latter is a new program that we certainly want to highlight today called Current Science Forums. In fact, my guest on Radio In Vivo just last week, Dr. Noel Brewer, was your featured speaker at a recent edition of the Current Science Forums. So tell us about this new one, and I understand we have another one coming up shortly.
We do. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock mm-hmm. in the Morehead Building, we'll have a Current Science Forum featuring faculty from the School of Public Health.
And that would be Thursday, December 6th.
Thursday, December 6th at Morehead Planetarium and Science Center.
This program will probably play again after that date,
okay.
So I don't want people showing up when it's not happening.
Okay, great. We will be investigating and discussing the water crisis in this state and in this nation. And the format of the program is a short talk presentation by our expert, and then we will engage in a discussion. You've been to one of those programs. You know that we'll break into
right.
At our tables, we'll break into discussion, and then we'll report out and ask additional questions of the expert at the conclusion of the program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Current Science Forums are a monthly program. That having been said, we are taking a break in January, but normally the 7 o'clock first Thursday of the month, there'll be a current science topic.
Mm-hmm,
Tentatively, I believe we're looking at performance-enhancing drugs in February. Is that your understanding? That's tentative.
It's tentative.
Denise is going to hit me for bringing that up. That's tentative.
Got to line up our expert.
Yes, yeah. Unless something else happens.
That's right.
Which,
sure.
If something else interesting in the science world happens, then we want to be able to respond to that in these forums and mm-hmm. Answer people's questions, give them information, encourage discussion of current science topics.
Well, the one I attended, and this program is still somewhat in its infancy.
Absolutely.
It's just gotten started. But there were about, 30 people in attendance, and about half were students,
mm-hmm.
and about half were, older people and non-students like me. So it was a very enlightening event and a lot of fun. Fun
I
way
think
to spend
that's,
an evening.
Yeah, that's a good point that we're... through our programming, trying to engage adult audiences.
Here we go, calling ourselves adults again.
There we go. Adults, maybe not grown-ups.
There you go.
We have long been a place for school children, and I think most museums are considered places for children, but because of our unique situation located on the UNC campus, because we're in the Research Triangle Park area, which is one of the most popular retirement destinations, that we are actually in a great position to become a place of lifelong learning about science. So the Current Science Forum is one of a few efforts we have to engage adults specifically in science programming.
Terrific. Well, again, we're starting to get short on time, and I do not want to let the hour pass by without also filling our listeners in on another very exciting and important program, which has come under Morehead's aegis, a science education outreach program called DESTINY, which actually stands for Delivering Edge-Cutting Science, Technology, and Internet Across North Carolina for Years to Come. And I'm reading that. I had not memorized it, believe me. I think that might be a case where maybe no acronym would have been okay. But, Jeff, why don't you fill us in on DESTINY?
DESTINY is a traveling science program that delivers programs across the state in high school science classrooms. It is a multi-ton, state-of-the-art science laboratory on wheels. To date, it has visited 97 of North Carolina's 100 counties. Mm-hmm. One of the key aspects of the program is teacher training, that the teachers who invite the bus and the bus will come and deliver the programs go through intensive training during the summer previous to become eligible. And one of the aspects, one of the goals is to improve the idea of inquiry-based science learning in the classroom. In other words, not so much, you know, lecturing from textbooks as much as doing hands-on real-life science. And the one thing which has been interesting as DESTINY has evolved is realizing that even the classrooms, the high school classrooms that are well-equipped, sometimes are dramatically underutilized. So you have two problems. You have some classrooms in poorer school districts that aren't very well-equipped at all, so it's hard to get cutting-edge scientific tools into the hands of students. And then you've got well-equipped classrooms with relatively inexperienced teachers who aren't comfortable using that equipment. And mm-hmm. we have master teachers who are going out and modeling for teachers how to do it, and at the same time delivering great content to the high school students directly.
I see. Well, that's another just terrific program being run at the Morehead. And I want to do a whole program with DESTINY at some point, maybe next year. And Denise, I'm going to give you about 1 minute to, as your education director at the Morehead, to describe any of the other education and outreach programs at Morehead that we have not yet covered.
Well, we just briefly mentioned Science Live, which is a program that engages the public in the foundations of science through what appears to be a magic show. Mm-hmm. A lot of theater, a lot of drama, a lot of things blowing up and big bangs and booms. But really, at its core, is about fundamentals of science, of physics, mm-hmm. material science. We've got a new one coming online about the human body as well.
Terrific. Well, we'll look forward to hearing more about that. Well, Denise Young and Jeff Hill, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out to bring us up to speed on the remarkable Morehead Planetarium and Science Center. It's absolutely a fabulous resource for the entire community, and you are making a tremendous contribution to the public's understanding of and appreciation for science.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And if any of you out there haven't been to the Morehead in recent years, you need to get over there and have a look. A lot going on. And you also need to stick with us on Radio En Vivo, because we've got a lot going on. And we certainly ask that you join us again next time for Radio En Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science community, right here on volunteer-powered WCOM-FM, Carrboro and Chapel Hill.